And I realized, Damon, that the goals I'd set for myself would involve me becoming comfortable with something I wasn't at that time comfortable with. And so I realized then that the best way for me to push through that was to...
Are you someone who truly wants to be a great leader? You have the drive, you have the passion for learning, and you're willing to put in the time? You have everything that's needed, except the tens of thousands of dollars it costs to go to business school or even hire an executive coach to help you level up the skills you need to be a great leader. Welcome to this episode of the Learn It All podcast, the show for today's leaders who want to get ahead and stay ahead of the game, because we know that being a great leader, you're not born or made, you're always in the making. I'm your host, Damon Lemby, a two-time best-selling author and the CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform that has helped upskill over 2 million people over the past 3 decades. Jeff is the host of the Read to Lead podcast, which has been around since 2013. It's a top 10 business podcast and a top number 3 career podcast on iTunes. I'm pumped up to share this conversation with Jeff today. We discussed the 8 research-based reasons why readers do better in their career. He talks about the importance of being intentional and consistent with your reading, the most common barriers, I'm sure you can think of a few, for why people don't read as much as they used to, and strategies on how to retain and implement what you learn from reading. Why is it more important than ever to be a lifelong learner, both as an individual and as an organization, and especially when it comes to reading?
Yeah, I think continuous learning allows leaders, allows organizations to stay adaptable and resilient in that face of uncertainty. And I think reading specifically, the thing I love about reading and one of the ways it's impacted me more than anything else is the exposure you get to diverse perspectives. Perspectives you might not have been exposed to just in your normal circles, right? The diverse experiences, diverse problem-solving strategies. It helps you stay ahead of trends, anticipate challenges, and pivot when you need to. In addition to that, it's a great way to sharpen your critical thinking skills, your creativity, which I think are all, you know, crucial to navigating uncharted territory, right?
Absolutely. It's been a game changer for me in my personal life. How about for you? How has reading changed your life for the better?
Well, it's been transformative for me, expanding my worldview. It's shaped my ability, I think, to think more strategically. I've learned to become more empathetic, I would say, just being exposed to different viewpoints and perspectives. I don't always agree with every author whose book I read, and I've even had some interviews where I've challenged authors on some things that I didn't agree with. Books on leadership have helped me better understand how to motivate other people. And then, on a more personal level, personal development books have allowed me to master, I think, get a better handle on self-discipline and things like focus. We live, as you've intimated, in a highly distractible world and environment. And the books I've read, particularly on habits and focus and things like deep work, have just helped me to master self-discipline and focus, I think, more than any other genre of learning would. Personally.
No, I like that. And I like to talk a lot about, to being a great leader, you got to start with self-leadership. You got to work inward and have the self-discipline and all the learning. So in your book, you talk about like the 8 like science-backed benefits of reading. Can you share a couple of them? I really like the ones around decision-making, innovation, creativity.
Yeah, the 8 are empowering you to empathize with other people. We've talked about empathy a little bit already. Improve your decision-making skills, as you talked about. Reducing stress. Research has shown that reading on a regular basis can help you sleep better. One that's important to me as I get older, it helps prevent cognitive decline as you age. Right? Strengthen your brain is another. Increase and make you more creative. And an obvious one is, you know, helping improve your vocabulary. reading is something that opens up all of those things. And I think if you're willing to make it a priority and do it with intention, and do it consistently, that's the key. These other things like strengthening your brain and making you more creative, those things aren't likely to happen if this is not a habit you're cultivating on a regular basis. That's what a habit is, right? It's something you're doing regularly and also with intention. Like you've got a plan, like you've got a thought process for why you're reading, what you're reading, and when you're reading it.
Now, that's so important. Let's talk a little bit more about, and we're going to get to the plan, but I'm curious a little bit more about how it helps you sleep better and reduce stress. Because I think that's so important, both of those.
Yeah, for me personally, and I'll speak just from personal experience, when it comes to like all I want to accomplish, like my goals in life, setting those goals are often involve things that are stretching me, right? Stretching me to go beyond where I'm at today, to become through that journey, someone I'm not yet, right? And if I just set those goals and then just jumped in, those are likely to transpire a little bit differently than they would if I would take a step back and think to myself, okay, who's accomplished this goal before me, right? Who's solved this problem already? And who might have solved it and also written about it, right? And so I think back to when, a couple of decades ago, when I had set some goals for myself, and I realized, Damon, that the goals I set for myself would involve me becoming comfortable with something I wasn't at that time comfortable with, and that was public speaking. I realized if I'm going to do the things I want to do in life, I'm going to have to get comfortable with this thing called public speaking, something that at the time was terrifying to me to the point that it was debilitating. I couldn't get up in front of a room full of people without looking visibly nervous, without shaking, without my voice quivering, all those things. And so I realized then that the best way for me to push through that was to look at who might have suffered from that before, who's writing about this topic now, and also to break it down into smaller pieces, like not start with like the overarching, public speaking topic and dive into books on public speaking more broadly, but think about how can I break this down into smaller steps? And so I started reading books on presentation design early on. And this is kind of funny to say this now, but my thinking at the time was, I'm going to focus first on creating these really compelling slides that really grab people's attention and communicate my ideas in just a really effective and eye-catching ways. And my thinking, the funny part is my thinking was, maybe I can get people to spend more time looking at my slides than looking at me.
I figure you're going to say that. Yeah.
I mean, less nervous. And I read books like Presentation Zen by Gar Reynolds and Slideology by Nancy Duarte. And once I'd read two or three books on that and began putting into practice what I was learning, in front of very small audiences that I could feel like I could still handle, then I moved to presentation structure. Like, how do you effectively structure a presentation? And I read books like The Secrets of Dynamic Communication by comedian and public speaker Ken Davis. And I learned that, well, it depends on what kind of presentation you're delivering. Is it a how type of talk, or is it a why type of talk? That's gonna factor in. And then I went from presentation structure to presentation delivery. And I read books like Tim Pollard's The Compelling Communicator and how to effectively deliver a presentation. And then eventually I went to probably where I should have started in hindsight, if I'm being honest, and that's presentation fears. And I read books like Fearless Speaking from Gary Gennard. And eventually on to injecting humor into presentation. So I just broke it down into these subtopics and found books, which was not hard to do, on just that subset of the larger topic of public speaking, and reading two or three books in each of those subtopics and building confidence as I went along and not trying to get everything right all at once.
No, I think that's great. And what I hear you saying too is you really focus on deliberate practice. You pick one specific area, read about it, and work on that, and that would help you overcome the fear. And books were a great partner for you on that.
Right.
I think that's so important too, especially for new leaders, as maybe they're stepping into a leadership role for the first time, and maybe their company isn't supporting them with any type of formal training. One of the areas I recommend is to start with reading biographies. Because like you said, learn from other people who've done things like that before. Do you have any great recommendations for biographies?
Yes, yes. I love a good biography too. The most recent one I've read several of Walter Isaacson's biographies. The most recent one was his Elon Musk biography. I actually listened to that one on Audible. I didn't purchase the physical copy. I generally prefer physical copies of books, but in that case, I listened to that one. But also Benjamin Franklin, An American Life, another Walter Isaacson penned book, and then his Steve Jobs biography. I've read a number of presidential biographies on Washington and Adams and Jefferson and Lincoln. And then more recently than that, one of my favorite biographers is Brian J. Jones. I've had him on the show to talk about a book of his that I just stumbled upon in Target one day and thought, oh, that looks interesting. It's called Becoming Dr. Seuss, Theodore Geisel and the Making of an American Imagination. And went and wrote a review of that book on Amazon, and he contacted me and we started a conversation and ended up inviting him on the show. I think that may be the only time I've ever had the author of a biography on Read to Lead, but he's also written a book called Jim Henson, the biography, of course, Jim Henson, the Muppets creator, and George Lucas, A Life, which I also own. So those are three of my favorite Brian J. Jones biographies.
I'll check it out. Now, as a leader and you're reading these biographies, what advice do you have for them for our listeners to really extract or to be, like you say, be intentional about getting content out of it for them that they can leverage to become a better leader?
What I try to do when I go through a book is I make a couple of passes and I start with a chapter and I skim the headings and the subheadings and kind of wrap my mind around you know, what it is the author's trying to communicate. And then I go back to the beginning of a chapter. And as I'm reading, I'm often just limiting myself to just making a couple of marks here and there and not yet in that taking notes phase. Like, if it's something of particular importance that I definitely want to dig into more deeply, I'll put an asterisk or a star next to it. If there's something I'm not quite sure I understand, or maybe it's something I don't think I agree with, I'll put a question mark in that spot. And then if there's a particularly pithy quote or something the author said that I want to remember that's quote worthy, I'll put a Q next to it. And then once I've finished that section of reading I'm doing, Damon, is I'll go back to where I've made those markings in that second pass, third pass in this case. And that's where I'll begin to start taking notes. So one of the reasons I do that is the way I do it with just the little markings at first is I try to read uninterrupted when possible, and then go back and go, okay, what was it about this that was so important to me? Why do I question this? What's that quote that I want to remember? And then I take these things and transfer them to my notes app. I've got a digital notes app. I use an app called Obsidian. And that's where all my notes, for not just books, but any notes I have live. They're all in this one vault, if you will. And that's because I want new ideas that I'm coming up with, or new information, new things I'm learning as I'm reading a new book, to have the ability to crash into all the old ones, like all the previous ones, right? And so that's where I find a lot of value in digital notes apps. And Obsidian is a great one for allowing for what's called bilateral or bidirectional linking. New ideas can more easily and serendipitously crash into the old ones. And it's oftentimes those seemingly disparate concepts or ideas that on the surface don't look like they relate, when those kind of things have the opportunity to coexist and live in the same place, that's where some pretty fascinating things and exciting things can happen.
No, that's where you could unlock the gold. Do you have any, put you on the spot, do you have any examples of that? Maybe an idea that you came across recently, or like, oh, wow, and then you connected it back to an older one?
You know, recently, I was, and this doesn't relate to necessarily a new idea per se to the crux of your question, But it's sort of adjacent to your question, so maybe this will answer it. I was recently delivering a talk, and as recent as a couple of weeks ago, on fear. One of the things I did to start was I thought, well, what have I collected over the last, decade and a half, let's say, on the topic of fear? And some of those things were brought to the surface quite quickly. But one of the things that I was able to surface from that was a related topic, and that's discomfort. I often use those words interchangeably, discomfort and fear. And it led me down a path I hadn't thought to go on. And that discomfort path led me down this place from, 40 years ago. And think back to the song, the recording of the song, We Are the World. You remember that song, right?
I love the song and the new documentary.
Yeah, and this new documentary reveals something that is discomfort related and fear related. And the documentary talks in part about how many of these artists who came together, who were themselves famous and had accomplished so much, they were intimidated by all the other people around them and felt like imposters, right?
Totally.
And so this example was surfaced, and I was able to include that in my talk about, you may suffer from inadequacy. That may be one of your fears, right? It's one of the 10 fears we talked about. You may suffer from imposter syndrome. Well, guess who else does, right? It affects everybody, and you're no different. And so just by nature, the fact that my notes from my reading and also my notes from my Netflix watching and other things live together in the same place, I can find things that have a connection that I wouldn't have necessarily seen without them living in the same place. And for me, that was something I had taken away from watching a Netflix documentary. Another thing I took away from another documentary I watched had to do with something Disney related. I don't remember the exact documentary, but it was something Disney related. And I used this also in my fear talk, where a Disney Imagineer said something to the effect of fear minus death equals fun. And that has always stuck with me, that if the death representing whatever the thing is you're most afraid of happening, like what's the worst case scenario? If you can logically remove that from the equation, and maybe it's because you're just overthinking it, maybe it's because you've taken steps to lessen the likelihood of that happening, whatever it might be. If you can subtract quote unquote death from the equation, then fear eventually leads to reward, eventually leads to fun. If you can push through that fear and allow yourself to get outside your comfort zone, that's where all the magic happens, right? And so it's these kind of otherwise disparate sources of ideas coming together under one roof, informing a singular piece of output that I'm working on.
I think that's so great. And Jeff, while you're speaking, it reminds me of when I was reading Losing My Virginity by Richard Branson, and he talked about some of the fears he had or what he was going through when he was first getting started. And I think that's what's so great about books. You know, you have this book and you're like with this person having a conversation with them almost, and it helps reduce that stress and say, hey, other people have been there too. And it's like you can get in your own little world. And that's one of the things why I think is so, so great about books. And with that, though, kind of switching gears a little bit, you talk about in your book, people are reading less these days. Why is that?
Yeah, it's I think it's a couple of things. It's time and focus primarily. In this talk I was just referencing that I gave a couple of weeks ago, one of the questions, it was a small group of about 30 people, and I asked, how many of you read on a regular basis? The talk wasn't about reading per se, but I was just curious. And I think 4 or 5 hands of the 30 went up. Of these adults, all of them parents, they've got small children, not a surprise at all. And so I think most people think they don't have time to read, or if and when they find time, they have an incredible amount of difficulty focusing for any amount of time. All of us have had our focus, our ability to focus, impacted by those devices we carry in our pockets, right? Those constant screens that are vying for our attention every moment of every day. It's not just those who are teenagers who don't know a world without a smartphone, let alone just a cell phone. It impacts the rest of us who, like you and me, I'll speak for myself, like me, I didn't grow up with a cell phone, right? I didn't have my first cell phone until I was 27 years old. I didn't have my first smartphone till about, 15 years ago. So I spent most of my adult life without that, but just still I'm impacted by it, just like everybody else. That screen, that constant buzzing for your attention, those things, those apps pulling at you. And so a couple of things I would recommend there. One is, if you want to read more, it's about making reading a non-negotiable, right? The things that are most important to us in our lives, we often schedule those things. If you want to take a vacation with your family, that's not going to happen without you making some effort to make it happen and putting it on your schedule and protecting that time. It's the same thing with anything else. And if you want to make reading a priority, it's got to become a priority by making it non-negotiable. So I would recommend scheduling it like any other important task. Now, I find one place a lot of people sort of trip themselves up is they start by setting some goals. They set aside time to read, and their goals typically involve like reading a certain number of pages or reading a chapter or what have you. And what often happens is that focus, you know, animal starts kicking and screaming, and you don't end up reading the amount, you don't end up doing the amount of reading you wanted to do, and you think you failed and all these types of things. So I often suggest, instead of starting with a number of pages or a chapter or anything like that, to start with reading for just a few minutes and not worrying about how much reading you got done during that time. Just make the goal reading for a specific amount of time. And that can be 10 minutes a day. That can be 15 minutes a day. And then building from there. And if you've got a commute, you know, audiobooks are a fantastic option for fitting reading into your commute or to your workout. I just had a guy tell me yesterday who has been listening to my podcast. He said, you know, I'm listening to audiobooks in addition to podcasts. I know that doesn't count, but I'm like, wait a minute. No, yes, it does. It counts. Audiobooks count. Ebooks count. Physical books count. Now, does research suggest that there are certain ways of styles of reading that are going to help you remember what you're reading better and more long-term? Sure. A physical book, I think, is probably the best of the options. But if your life doesn't allow for that right now, but you've got a commute or you're working out, try audiobooks. There's nothing wrong with listening to a book, as some people seem to think. And so start small, make reading a priority by scheduling it, protect that time like you would anything else, and set your goals around reading for specific amounts of time rather than specific numbers of pages. And then once you've read for that time, walk away. You've met your goal. You've done what you set out to do, and then come back at it again the next day.
I think that's so great. And I've heard you speak about it, and others people speak about it as well. You know, reading for 10 to even 25 minutes is probably the maximum you should read as far as getting in retention. And we'll get into that in a sec. But so what advice do you have for the individuals out there? And I know quite a few who say they just don't have time to read. You know, how can they look at them before we even get to scheduling it? How can they self-reflect on their own life to figure out how to carve out time for reading?
Yeah. What I'll often do is when someone tells me that, I'll say something like, hey, let's put that aside for a second. Let me ask you about something else you probably do. And it's like, oh, what's that? I said, what's your favorite television show? And 9 times out of 10, they've got an answer. And I'll say, well, you don't seem to have any trouble finding time for that. And there's nothing wrong with watching television. Don't get me wrong. But that's just, to me, proof positive, an example of where are your priorities? Do you really not have time to read? Or are you deciding, and that's your decision, that's fine, but are you deciding, are you choosing to put other things before that? You know, I personally watch very little television. This time of the year, we're in the fall, and so I love to watch NFL football. So Sunday afternoons, you'll find me often doing that. But that's about the only time of the year I watch television with any regularity, and it's once a week typically. Well, maybe more than that if I count Thursday nights and Monday nights, but you get the idea. Because football's on 3 or 4 nights a week now. But that's about all I watch. And then besides that, right now, there's one other show that I'm interested in, and that's it. That's all the television. Everything else is books, or I'll even watch YouTube videos that are all about something I want to learn. and someone else has already mastered it, and I want to learn from them and how they accomplished X, Y, or Z. I watch a lot of AI related YouTube videos. Also, read a lot of AI related books. But again, I think it just comes down to, have you evaluated how you're spending your time? And I would really recommend what I call an ideal week. And this gets back to scheduling a little bit, but I would track how you spend your time for a week, but then also identify on paper ultimately what an ideal week looks like to you. Like, if you could spend each and every week and just map it all out, what would that look like? And it's not until you've identified what an ideal week looks like, Damon, that you can actually ever get anywhere close to achieving it, right? It's not that we're going to be perfect week in and week out and always master or achieve our ideal week. But to get close, and if your ideal week includes reading, obviously, you include that in there. But unless we've identified what it looks like, we're not going to get close to achieving it. So I actually have an ideal week calendar. It's 1 week. And at every hour of the day I'm awake, I've accounted for. I'm like, what would I ultimately want to do on this day of the week with that time? Now, that doesn't mean I don't change it up and do interviews like this one and that sort of thing. But I make sure that I have said, okay, here's what a perfect week and an ideal week looks like. And then start with that and then build my week from there so that I'm doing what I've set out to do. I'm setting aside time for specific goals. I've set aside time specifically for reading specific books, spending time with specific people. All those things are mapped out. Now, I once showed this to someone, and I'll wrap this answer up here because I'm getting a little long-winded here. But I once showed this with someone who was saying, you know, I can't seem to get it all done. I can't seem to figure out how to master my time more effectively. And I showed them my ideal week calendar. And their first response was, because every hour was accounted for, Jeff, I don't want to be that busy. They missed the point, or I didn't do a good job of explaining it. My point was, no, you're going to presumably live those hours. Dave Ramsey, the financial guru, says, you know, it's how important it is to budget, because you want to spend your time on paper before you spend it for real, so you don't get to the end of the month and wonder where all the money went, right? And this is simply about spending your time on paper first before the week happens, so that you can tell it where to go instead of getting to the end of the week and wondering where it all went. Yeah, and I always suggest, too, reframing reading as an investment in your leadership. I think a lot of people don't think of it that way. We talked about starting small. We talked about turning dead time into learning time. I think Zig Ziglar called, you know, in-car listening sort of like automobile university, you know, back in the day. And once you start, you'll find that even small doses of reading add up and make significant impact. It's like anything else. You know, if I eat a salad today because I'm trying to eat more healthy, there's no immediate return on an investment for having eaten that salad. I don't notice any change. The change happens over a long period of time. One of the problems with reading is if I read today, even if I view that as an investment in my leadership, there's not necessarily an immediate return on investment, right? And we have to understand that return on investment comes gradually, oftentimes, after consistency. After that habit is built.
Intentional and consistency. And so that kind of leads me to this next question. I had a guest on the show the other day, a guy you love, Jim Schlechter. He wrote a book called The Great CEOs Are Lazy. And we were getting into it. And he was saying, well, you know, sometimes I have this guilty pleasure of reading fiction, but it's okay to read fiction, right? One, I think if you're just getting started reading, it builds a muscle. But even if you read a lot, how is can fiction benefit you in your development?
Yeah, I think fiction is great for improving emotional intelligence. We talked a little bit about reading helping you see things from different perspectives. I think fiction can help there. You know, cultivates empathy, allowing you to experience, you know, things like complex emotions and scenarios through the various characters. We talked a bit about biographies. Biographies can show you how other leaders navigated certain challenges, giving you real life examples of perseverance and things like creativity. But going back to fiction, I think primarily the two things are emotional intelligence and empathy. And those eight things we talked about, the research early on, those eight things that reading regularly can help foster, that applies to fiction as well as nonfiction.
That's interesting. And around storytelling too, as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When it comes to reading, a great quote of a gentleman I had on my show, David Katz, said, learning without doing is treason. And the same kind of goes for reading. And I like in your book, you talk about, for instance, being, you know, intentional about your time of reading. So let's speak about that a little bit. So for instance, at nighttime, before you go to sleep, what's best as far as reading?
Yeah, I think I tend to read fiction before going to bed. I tend to read nonfiction in the early morning hours. Generally, what I'm reading in nonfiction books are things that I'm looking to ultimately learn how to apply to my business and my journey and personal professional development. And so my creativity and my energy and all of that is at its highest in the morning. And so I'm reading those types of books, nonfiction, in the morning. But when I'm just looking to get a good night's sleep and I just want to kind of unwind, then that's when I'll tend to read something that's maybe a fiction book or sometimes a biography. And when it comes to biographies, I find more and more, Damon, that I enjoy listening to biographies more than reading biographies. I don't know why that is necessarily, but that, like the Elon Musk one I mentioned earlier, I listened to that one recently. Sometimes I'll go to bed listening to an audiobook, like a biography or something like that.
No, that's great. And I think at the end of the day too, when you're selecting books to read, you gotta find stuff that you're interested in, because when it comes to retention now, if your mind's wandering while you're reading, you're not going to get anything out of it, right? So,
right.
What are some recommendations in your book? You talk about, you know, getting it, absorbing the content into your blood, you know. So, and then you also talk about the difference between comprehension and retention. So let's talk a little bit about both of those.
Yeah, comprehension is whether or not you understand what you're reading, and retention is basically whether or not you remember it. And so we talked a little bit about note-taking. I call it note-making. I think it's sort of the next level of note-taking. And this goes back to some of the things I talked about earlier about making these markings as you read pass number one, kind of reading the headings and the subheadings and familiarizing yourself with the conversation the author wants to have with you. And then the second pass is making those markings as you read, and oftentimes just allowing yourself to just keep reading. And things are ruminating, sure, but you're staying in flow when you're just making those quick little three markings I talked about. And the third pass is about then digging in more deeply to those markings you made and creating notes out of those, right? It's those that then get transferred to that place where they're going to live. And it's those phases that are all playing a role in retention and comprehension. It sounds like a lot of work, and in some sense, it is. But I don't know that there's necessarily a way around that. I mean, learning involves, it can be hard. It can involve, you know, actually, you know, putting in some effort. And so this is no different. And if that's, you know, I kind of think harken back as I'm kind of saying all this, I'm harkening back to a Stoic philosophy I've read much about, and it's, you know, easy choices, hard life, hard choices, easy life, right? John Maxwell talks about this in a number of his books. Just every day you have a choice. You can choose self-discipline and sacrifice today, or you can choose regret later, right? So which one of those is it going to be? And so I choose more often than not with each day, and this involves the reading that I do and the learning I want to do and the retention and the comprehension, it's going to involve making that choice of sacrifice and self-discipline now, because future you is going to thank you when you do that. You'd much rather have future you thanking you for those sacrifices than to have future you mad at you because you chose the easy road. Now future you is stuck with regret, right? And so this is not necessarily easy. It involves some effort on your part. But here's the thing to remember. There are so few people doing this. But just by doing the, let's forget note-taking. Let's forget even trying to put into action what you're learning. Let's just say all you're going to worry about is just filling your head with knowledge. And you're not even going to do anything with it. Just that alone, most people aren't doing. So just by doing that, you're doing something the majority of your peers, of your competitors are not doing. But then when you take that next step of working and doing the things necessary to comprehend what you're learning and to retain what you're learning, well, then you're in the top, 5-10% of your peers and your competitors.
That's so true. And you don't need to go from 0 to 100. Like we've spoken about, there's books like Tiny Habits and Atomic Habits that talk about that. And just being a little bit better and maybe taking one step at a time. But if I'm somebody, Jeff, let's say I'm a leader and I'm like, I'm reading all these books, but I'm not retaining it or I'm not putting it into action. What advice do you have for them where they could take it from, getting some type of knowledge that they're losing some of the knowledge, retaining some, but how do they put it into implementation?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a matter of when you sit down to read, a particular book, I think it's important to identify what is it you want to get out of reading that book? Like, why have you chosen that book in the first place? What is it you hope to pull from it, to get out of it, to learn from it? And actually write that down. Commit that to paper so that that's out in the open. And then once you've written that thing down, what is it I want to get out of reading this book, of interacting with this book, of having a conversation with this author on this topic? Then look at the table of contents and ask yourself, and this works for nonfiction, not for fiction, obviously, but then ask yourself, okay, which chapter or chapters specifically lend themselves to my goal for sitting down and reading this book? Is it the entire book or is it certain sections of the book? Then give yourself permission in the case of, let's say it's chapters 5, 7, and 10. Start with those chapters. In the nonfiction space, you can do that. That's okay. Now, maybe some authors would prefer you not do that, but you're the one doing the reading and you can do it however you want. And so I would start there. And then if after reading in this example, say those three chapters, if you've gotten what you were looking for, go back to that statement you wrote down. If you've accomplished what you've set out to get from this book, give yourself permission to stop right there. And guess what? You've read that book. You may not have read every chapter, but I would have no problem with someone asking you, have you read such and such book? If you've read three chapters and you got out of it what you wanted to get out of it, and you said, yes, I have, that's an honest answer. Okay? So one thing we have to do is sort of free ourselves up to thinking, I've got to read every book from start to finish. But every book you do start, identify what it is you want to get out of it. And that's going to really help you narrow in and focus. As you read, you're going to be looking for exactly those things. As you come across those things, as we've discussed, make sure those things are captured and in your notes app. And then I would begin thinking about, well, okay, here's the things I've learned. Here's how I'm doing things now. Here are other ways they could be done. Let's break these things down into smaller steps and begin going, okay, what are the one or two or three things I can do today differently from what I've learned versus how I've been doing things? And let me implement those into my day or my week or my month. Again, it comes back to intentionality. We're reading with super level of intentionality. It's not just reading for reading's sake. We're reading with an end goal in mind.
And that goes for listeners. That goes for reading, that goes for taking classes, that goes for watching a documentary, is that if you come in with a purpose for it or what you want to get out of it, and maybe even think about how is this going to relate to my work and what's one thing I can do, like Jeff just said, is so important. Another thing I think, and maybe you could share about this a little bit, is the value in doing teaching it back, you know, something you've learned, finding an audience to teach it back to.
Yeah, I think unless you can explain concepts simple enough for other people to understand, you haven't actually internalized them yourself. So it's a really quick way to figure out, do I really know this stuff, right? And teaching it forces you to be able to get in front of a group or around a conference table and teach it, forces you to really grasp with what it is you're reading until the point that you know it well enough that you feel comfortable imparting that to other people. And then when people ask questions, or maybe there are things you're not quite sure how to answer, that really sort of exposes, wow, I didn't quite go as deep on this area as I needed to, because when so-and-so asked me that question, I wasn't quite immediately ready with how I should answer that. So just doing that feedback that you're going to get from the questions you get that maybe you didn't anticipate are going to show you immediately where the holes are that need to be filled.
No, I think that that's great. That's one thing I try to do often is, you know, teach back. It helps you formulate what you learned and you can learn more from it. And, you know, as we're kind of winding up, I do have a question. So let's say I'm a leader and I'm like, I'm all into reading. I love reading. I love learning. But I'm having a hard time getting my team bought in on it when it comes to reading. What is like a first step you can do as a team to get your team more engaged when it comes to reading?
Well, as a leader, I would first of all say start by leading by example. If you're 100%. An avid reader, you know, share insights from books with your team. I think back to a specific leader I had, and this was before I was an avid reader. He in part was responsible for the reading habit I have today. And he's who I dedicate the book to, or one of a couple of people I dedicate the book to. Because I would see him reading in his office. And at the time I would think I'm catching him doing something that he shouldn't be doing. Like he's goofing off or something. Right. That's where my brain was at the time. But I started asking him questions. I go, what are you reading? Oh, it's Good to Great by Jim Collins. Oh, well, what's that about? And I hadn't read but one or two nonfiction books in my entire life. I'm in my late 20s or something like that, maybe early 30s. And, you know, I left college being of the mindset, well, I'm glad all the learning's done, right? I'm glad I don't have to read anymore. I just educated out of me this desire to want to continue reading because I was always having to read things I wasn't interested in. And he's the one who introduced me to Seth Godin as we got together with a book club. The first book I was exposed to was Purple Cow by Seth Godin. And I was like fascinated. Like, here's somebody who's this marketing expert and I'm trying to learn how to be a better marketer. And he's teaching me how to do it in this book. I can read in an afternoon. What? Are you kidding me? This is fantastic. And so it started with seeing someone else doing it and being curious about it because he was leading by example. Then he encouraged book discussions. He shared reading lists. As I mentioned, he even ended up starting a book club. He made learning a part of the conversation in our one-on-one meetings that we had. And I think another good thing about book clubs is it fosters an open dialogue and diverse viewpoints among the teams can come out, which can lead to, you know, innovative solutions to common challenges. It's a great way to deepen understanding of a book too, to see how others interpret the same material maybe differently than you did. And one thing I love about it is it also fosters stronger connections within the team and promotes a culture of continuous learning. There are members of this team that I was a part of with this leader who encouraged me to read that here, you know, 15 years later, we're still connected. I just had dinner with a couple, my wife and I, the wife of whom I used to work with, who was on this team. Our leader had a birthday last month. We were all texting one another. We haven't seen him for probably 15 years, but we remember birthdays. We remember when annual events come around that we used to attend together, and we'll text back and forth when those events come around. It's because of those bonds that were built in this continuous learning environment. And all of that started with sharing books and a book club.
That's amazing. I love what you just said right there. To kind of recap that right there is if you want to build a learning culture, you got to lead by example. How are you going to expect others to do it if you're not going to do it? And you go out and you share insights, which is so important. And you get people involved that way. And for you organizations out there that don't have a training budget or a very small one, do a book club. And like you said, Jeff, it just really fosters diverse ideas and thoughts. And it gets people collaborate more. And look what it's done for you. You have friends for life. Starting from that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Your book came out in the end of 2022, right?
It was August of 21. Yeah.
Since that time, have you changed your thoughts at all?
Yes. Yes. With regard to how I interact with a book, yes, AI has changed that in some instances. Now, this is typically not books I'm reading for my personal edification, but maybe books I'm reading for like the show, like for Read to Lead, which sometimes is both for the show and for personal edification. Those aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. Didn't mean to suggest that. But I used to always insist on a physical copy of a book. And truth be told, if I have but one choice, that at the end of the day is going to be my choice, is I want to hold it. I want to feel it. I want to be able to flip back and forth to pages and just the tactile nature of a book is so important to me. And I think ultimately that's the way books should be consumed, if all else being equal, if you have that opportunity, if you have that ability. I have found, too, lots of joy in how quickly I can disseminate the key ideas and main insights, key ideas from a book by interacting with that book through AI. And so on occasion, and this is probably more often the case than not, when I'm asked to interview an author, often they'll send a PDF of that book. Maybe the book isn't even ready yet. But one of the first things I do is I engage with that book using ChatGPT or Notebook LM from Google or a similar tool, and begin asking questions of the AI about the book. And some of the insights I'm able to glean quickly from doing that has just been amazing. And I talked to Seth Godin about this recently too, an interview that I'm getting ready to publish about AI and books. And I'm paraphrasing here. I don't know if I'm going to get this exactly right because it's been a couple of weeks since I've listened to the conversation. But what I remember from what he said was, in that instance, was books are dead. But books are dead. It's my paraphrase of what he said. But if I were to sort of maybe unpack that a little bit, I would say that much like other industries have been impacted by technology, books are no different. And we've had the Kindle, which makes it easier to highlight and get notes and things we want to remember out of books. Sure, for those who prefer reading that way, audiobooks, etc. But AI is going to vastly change how we interact with books, and I think publishers need to really be thinking about this too, about how it changes their world. I come from a broadcast world. I come from a radio world. Radio is much different today than it was when I was in it, a dozen or so years ago. I spent 26 years in radio, Damon, as you know. I virtually never listened to local terrestrial radio, and it's what I did for 26 years. I almost never, as I've already intimated, watch broadcast television. There are so many options, and our options are more and more and more fragmented than they've ever been. And the way we consume books is going to be impacted by this new technology. I don't necessarily think it's for the better. I think, books when they came on the scene 500 or so years ago rewired our brains, the synapses in our brains, the connections in our brains, in a powerful and positive way. Just this mounds of information being able to be contained in a single volume. That's one of the things I love about physical books is it's everything in one place. You know, this person or persons have come together to share their knowledge, and it's everything in one place. It's right here. But I think the internet and technology and AI more specifically and our devices are undoing some of that rewiring. We've already talked about how attention spans have shrunk because of some of this technology. It's making it more and more and more difficult for us to sit down for any length of time without being distracted, to learn, to grow. So I don't know if I agree with Seth necessarily that books are dead, but him saying that certainly made me sit up straight and take notice, because he's right more often than he's wrong. And so I'm following this very, very closely, for better or for worse.
I think it's very interesting. And for our listeners out there, you're going to have to check out, I believe it's episode 550 of Read to Lead with Seth Godin, who's a fourth time on Jeff's show. Jeff, I think that's a great way to end this conversation. I loved what we talked about today. We talked about why reading is so important, some of the benefits of it, from decision-making to creativity, how to be great at it, you really have to be intentional and consistent. And even if it's just doing it in small chunks, even if it's 5-10 minutes to get started. Then we talked about how to retain more information. Oh, I don't want to forget. I love the idea of the ideal work, ideal week, you know, on your self-reflection and everything else. And then how to get involved with your organization, maybe through a book club. And then finishing up, the power of AI. It is going to change the world when it comes to almost everything, including reading. And whether you like it or not, there are you could find some benefits in it. So you're going to have to shift and adjust. So this has been a super powerful conversation, Jeff. Where can our listeners and watchers who are on YouTube connect with you?
Yeah, a couple of places. You can always go to readtoleadpodcast.com. That's where you'll find more about the podcast itself. Then I've got an online community, the Read to Lead community online, where we have live sessions each and every month. Ask me anything, where we delve into topics like leadership and marketing and personal development and mindset and AI and all these sorts of things once a month, and then have a guest expert come in once a month as well. That's at my name, jeffbrown.me. So jeffbrown.me, readtoleadpodcast.com. If you want to find out more about the book, readtoleadbook.com.
And so for our listeners out there, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to take this episode and text it to somebody that maybe wants to be a reader, but they always tell you, oh, they don't have enough time to read, right? So text it to your friends, and you have to check out his book and his podcast, Read to Lead. And until next time, like I always like to stay curious and keep learning. Have a great day, everybody. See ya.